recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty.
Bob, you'll get a real sense of the hatred that makes football so great.
I've got the fever, gambling fever.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, let's do it. Another edition of Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5, coming to you live on this Monday night, July the 22nd. My co-host, Corey LaBounty, you know what that means, right?
What does that mean, Dalton? Tell everybody exactly what that means.
It means football's in the air. We are 33 days until kickoff in the very first college football game of the 2019 season. And it's going to be a banger, too. They didn't do what they normally do, which is what they've been lining up. I know Notre Dame had an international game, I think, last year. And Hawaii's always playing in that first weekend. But we're going to get Florida and Miami in a week zero matchup to start the college football season. And from right now, 39 days from today, we'll have the first official full week of college football with Alabama taking on Duke and Auburn facing off against Oregon there in Jerry's house in Arlington. So football is in the air. We had SEC Media Days last weekend in Hoover, possibly for the last time in Hoover, Alabama, as they get ready to move to Atlanta next season and then Nashville the season after that. But even here on a local level, I know Sunbelt Media Days or Media Day was today. South Alabama had our contingent out there, and also high school football media day today. So football is definitely here, and that's why we're talking it each and every Monday night on Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. Now, last week we previewed, and the plan here is to preview a Power 5 conference each week leading into the season, and tacking the Sun Belt on top of that. So the Power 5 conferences plus the Sun Belt here in the coming weeks. Last week we talked Pac-12 football. Tonight we're going to start on the Big 12 football preview. And coming up in the next segment, we're talking with Ben Kercheval from CBS Sports. He's going to fill us in on everything we need to know about the Big 12. Also tonight, hopefully looking into a little bit of an NFL preview. Last week we talked about the NFC South and NFC West. Tonight we're talking about the other half of the NFC. Do a little bit of an NFC East preview and NFC North preview. And also a really cool guest that we'll be talking to tonight, Otis Hughley. And he is, I guess, Corey, part of this huge basketball tournament with a big-time payout that's going to be on ESPN, the Loyalty is Love tournament. And we'll be talking to him here at the bottom half of the hour.
Excited for Otis Hughley. He's the former LaFleur High School coach, was DeMarcus Cousins' high school basketball coach at LaFleur High School, went on to coach as an assistant with DeMarcus his rookie year with the Sacramento Kings. And then the next year, Otis moved on to Golden State and was part of Mark Jackson's staff there. But now the basketball tournament that's been on for $2 million at stake is so fun to watch because the rules are a little bit different. We'll get Coach Hughley's take on that hopefully here at about 6:30. So excited to talk about him and DeMarcus Cousins putting that team together in the offseason to possibly win his former coach some money as well as the players.
Yeah, and I'm interested. Very, very cool tournament they got going on. So we'll talk with Otis Hughley right after about 6:30. But I wanted to start the show off tonight the same way we always do and kind of run around some headlines from over the weekend. And if you weren't watching early yesterday, you probably missed it. But Shane Lowry winning golf's final major of the year.
In Ireland's Shane Lowry is an Open champion at Royal Portrush.
He won it in front of his fellow countrymen there in Northern Ireland. Ended up winning by 6 strokes yesterday, the first major tournament title in Lowry's career. And he really set himself up well with a great third round on Saturday. He shot a 63 and ended up taking a 4-stroke lead into the final round Sunday. And then just like everybody else yesterday, Lowry had a bit of a tough round for the fourth day. He ended up shooting a 1-over-72. But because the rest of the field also had a bad day, he ended up winning by 6 strokes at 15 under for the tournament. And like I mentioned, he is an Irishman. He won it in front of his entire country. Here he is talking about that big win afterwards.
To be able to go home this evening, like, I'm home now, like, do you know what I mean? To be able to win it at home, and it was just so easy for people to make the trip up to watch me, and, you know, to be able to go out and celebrate with local people is just, it's obviously very nice.
Yeah, Lowry, a huge long shot, 80-1 odds before the tournament. I actually saw somebody put $150 on him at 105-1 odds. So I think they walked out with about $15,000 in cash with Lowry winning that. But it was record-breaking, too. Only the third time in 40 years that the Open Championship winner won by at least six shots. You had Louis Oosthuizen back in 2010. He won at St. Andrews by seven strokes. And then, of course, the man, Tiger Woods, he also won at St. Andrews back in 2000 by eight strokes. So a record-setting win for Shane Lowry yesterday.
The purse wasn't bad either, Dalton. I always like to see what the winners win at any of these golf events. $1.9 million that was won. You look at Brooks Koepka. I thought he was the favorite going in, and I really thought he was going to win the whole thing. If I was placing money, that's who I would have said. And it was interesting to see who did not even make the cut. Two favorites, I think McIlroy and Tiger Woods, both missed the cut and weren't there on moving day. So that's always interesting when you have your big name stars not making the cut.
And it's strange now. I mean, we're still in July. All four majors for this year are done, with the PGA Championship moving earlier in the year. Started it off with a bang this year with Tiger holding off Koepka to win the Masters. That was, of course, Tiger's 15th career major championship. And then next up, PGA Championship, you had Koepka win his fourth career major at Bethpage Black. He won that one by two strokes. Then June, Gary Woodland won the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach by three strokes. And Lowry outdid them all with his first major six-stroke win yesterday. And also, I kind of looked back a little bit of research, because that also brings to an end an entire decade of majors. The next major championship will be the beginning of a new decade. And I was kind of looking at some stats to see who won the most majors over the last decade. I don't know if you'd believe that if I told you that Tiger would only win one major in the 2010s, and that's that Masters win from earlier this year. Koepka won four of the 40 majors over this decade, and those all came in the last 3 years, and he's tied with Rory McIlroy for the most major championships in the 2010s. Rory also won four, but all of his came between 2011 and 2014. Jordan Spieth, he won three majors over the decade. Bubba Watson with two green jackets. Phil Mickelson also won two, and even Germany's Martin Keimer won two majors this decade. But Tiger Woods only won major, and also Dustin Johnson, guy who's been considered at the top of the golf world for years now, he only won one major. That was that 2016 U.S. Open. But Shane Lowry getting it done in front of all of Ireland yesterday. Another guy who is still getting it done in a completely different sport, Manny Pacquiao, winning another welterweight title on Saturday night. 40 years old, Corey, and he beat the unbeaten welterweight champ Keith Thurman. They're calling it the fight of the year. I don't know. I wasn't able to. Okay, that's the wrong choice of wording. I did not feel like paying $80 to just watch Manny Pacquiao fight. I didn't recognize any of the names on the undercard, but they're saying possibly fight of the year. I know Pacquiao dropped Thurman in the first round with a sweet right hand after hitting him in the body with the left, but Thurman, being 10 years younger than Pacquiao, apparently looked better later in the fight, and a lot of people had him winning on the scorecards. But split decision, Pacquiao walks away with another welterweight title.
Dalton, Pac-Man wins in a split decision at 40 years old, and it was a very impressive win by him. And what do I mean by that? When I had an opportunity to watch the fight, I just saw somebody who was hungry. To me, he looked in better shape, even though he was 10 years older. And now Pac-Man becomes the fifth oldest champion in boxing history. When you look at his age, being 40 years old, I remember George Foreman when he had his knockout against Michael Moore. It was pretty interesting as well. But I just think that Pac-Man, he's good for boxing. Again, the undercard, I wasn't that impressed with either. But the fact that Pac-Man was able to sustain 12 rounds and, to me, really dominate the fight from start to finish for all 12 rounds, a rematch is definitely coming, but kudos to Pac-Man for getting it done.
Now, I'm sure another rematch Pac-Man would like to have is that Floyd Mayweather rematch, just because the dollar amount that comes into contention once you start talking about that. But they're saying next up for Pac-Man, if he doesn't do the rematch, probably Errol Spence Jr. or Sean Porter, who are fighting here in just a couple months. And one more bit of news before we get into some Big 12 talk with Ben Kercheval from CBS Sports. News today, a suspension handed down to former Alabama defensive lineman and current Seattle Seahawk Jaron Reed. The NFL went ahead and took him away. They're going to suspend him for 6 games this year for violating the personal conduct policy. I guess this incident happened early 2017. And Reed, in that case, not charged or arrested. But I guess the league feels they had enough evidence to hit him with the now standard, and I'm saying that in quotations, the standard 6-game suspension for domestic violence.
Yeah, you look at the NFL suspension rate for violation of the NFL's personal conduct policy. On the flip side of that, Tyreek Hill, he is reinstated and is able to go ahead and continue to play for the Kansas City Chiefs. And Hill was accused of striking his son, his 3-year-old son, earlier in the year, and now he's able to play. So Reed's out. We talked about the Seahawks and that defense and how the Legion of Boom was gone and how they were trying to replace guys, but it starts up front, and Reed's absence is going to hurt the Seahawks tremendously.
And Reed, I mean, he has really become a staple of that defense. Last year, he was second on the team in sacks with 10.5. The only other guy that had more than 10 was the leader, Frank Clark. He had 13 sacks last season, and he ended up leaving in free agency to Kansas City. So the rest of the team outside of Clark and Reed combined for 12.5 sacks last year. It's going to be tough, at least those first 6 games, without him there in the middle of the defense.
10.5 sacks is really hard to replace in the NFL, so we'll see how he winds up coming back. He should be fresh after those 6-game suspension.
All right, we're fresh here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5, and when we come back, we're talking Big 12 with Ben Kercheval from CBS Sports. We'll get his take on the Oklahoma Sooners, Texas Longhorns, and the rest of that conference as we get ready for a brand new college football season.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey Labounty in with you on this Monday night. And very interested to talk with Ben Kercheval from CBS Sports as we continue our preview of the Power 5 conferences heading into the 2019 college football season. Last week we talked Pac-12. This week it's all about the Big 12. And now we join to the show. Ben Kercheval, thank you so much for joining us tonight, Ben.
You're welcome. How you guys doing?
Hey, we are doing great. Wonderful. And even better now that college football is getting closer and closer. And I know I've read some of your writings on the Big 12 and the Oklahoma Sooners, of course, the heavy favorite to win the Big 12 this year, according to Vegas's odds makers. They have them at just about even money to win the conference. I know they've won the Big 12 4 years in a row now and have lost in the playoff semifinals 3 of those 4 years. What's your take? Let's just start it off with the big McGill of the Oklahoma Sooners and Jalen Hurts now at quarterback after 2 straight Heisman-winning quarterbacks departed the team. What's your take on Oklahoma as we get ready for this Big 12 season?
Well, they have every reason to be the favorite. At this point, you know, new quarterback, it seems no problem. The Lincoln Riley transfer emporium seems to be operating at full efficiency here. I think the important thing is not, I don't want to say temper expectations, because obviously they're so high, and that's not really the right way to put it, but I think when you're looking at Jalen, it's really easy to start going, okay, well, you know, how is he going to compare to Kyler? How is he going to compare to Baker? And I think that, one, those comparisons are a little unfair. They're kind of different players. I mean, Baker was always a real gunslinger type of quarterback, throw it around all over the place. You know, Bob Stoops really, even a few years ago, was like, we sort of have to rein him in just a little bit. And then I think when you go from that then to Kyler, who was, one, a Texas high school football legend. I mean, when you think about all of the products who come out of the Texas high school football system, and for Kyler to be a legend within that really says something about him. But then, you know, he goes to A&M, and I don't know that, you know, he shows a lot of real star-studded power right away as a freshman battling with Kyle Allen, and it takes him a few years to really emerge to that type of player that we saw last year under Lincoln Riley. And so, but he's this incredible athlete. I mean, just an unbelievable player with his legs and then his arm, despite his size. And then you move on from that to Jalen, who, you know, I think he showed last year in the SEC championship game that he can be more of a passer. I mean, he came off the bench and was really sharp. But I think his legs will always probably be his 1A option, and I think how Lincoln sort of adjusts to that skill set with Trey Sermon coming back, Kennedy Brooks coming back, two really good running backs, which has been quietly a very sort of bread and butter part of their offense. I think you're going to see more of a three-headed monster in the backfield with Jalen. But I think you just got to let him go out and just, you know, be who he is, not feel like, okay, are they going to get another Heisman winner out of him? Are they going to, you know, go to the playoff again? I mean, they have the big expectations, but look, Jalen's a great leader. Everyone really takes to him very, very easily. It's easy to see why he can come in and gain respect of everyone very quickly, but you just have to let him, you know, be comfortable in the type of offense where he's going to thrive. And I think Lincoln is really good at adapting plays, you know, calling things that are really specific to guys, put them in good positions to succeed. And I just think you just got to let, you know, give it a few games and just let the whole thing unfold. But I think if you give him that patience, they're still going to be an 11-win team this year.
You look at Oklahoma, you talk about them being an 11-win team. Let's talk about the quartet of new coaches within the Big 12, a 40% turnover now. When you look at all the new coaches, Les Miles comes in. How is that going to change the dynamics of the Big 12 with all the new coaches? And give us some names to watch out for first-year head coaches.
Well, I would say that the four new guys probably aren't going to make a huge impact in year one. Most of them are going to be at or near the bottom, I think, by the end of the season. I mean, Les, he's doing a good job on the recruiting standpoint, but I obviously can't have a long way to go before it's even going to be potential for bowl eligibility. So he's got his work cut out for him. I don't know that that's the hire I would have made, but certainly football is always more interesting with Les Miles in it. So if he can get Kansas to a bowl game, God bless him and you know, hope he can do it. But you know, I think that the guy in the other part of the state is, you know, Chris Kleeman at Kansas State, coming from North Dakota State. And I talked to Chris a few years ago when he was at NDSU, and you know, I think he's the right guy to take over Bill Snyder's program. You know, remember, he succeeded Craig Bohl before Craig Bohl went over to Wyoming, and at the time, Craig Bohl had sort of transitioned this program to sort of what we know it to be now. And then when Kleeman took over, he really did a good job of maintaining the culture of success that was in place, but also, you know, putting his own brand of success on it. And then, you know, clearly they went on and won another four national championships. And I think when you say, okay, who's going to be the guy after Bill Snyder, which is a really hard thing to pull off, I think he's a really good choice for them. And it was Neil Brown and Matt Wells at West Virginia and Texas Tech, respectively. They have some rebuilding jobs ahead of them. But I think with Brown specifically, obviously coming from y'all's neck of the woods, with Troy, you know, this was, you know, when he replaced Dana Holgorsen, Holgorsen went to Houston, which I think was a better fit for him. And people in West Virginia, I kind of come from that neck of the woods, and I'll tell you, they were sort of ready to see him go. I think 8 years in the same place is a long time anymore. His best team was last year, and they went like 8-4, you know, whatever it was. It was sort of time for a change. And it's really hard late in the coaching cycle to really nail a hire. But I thought Shane Lyons really nailed the hire, bringing Neil Brown. The entire fan base really respects the heck out of him. I think he's the right guy for the job, but you know, that's a little bit of a tough place to recruit to in the Big 12. It can take a little while to build that thing up. You got to give him about 3 or 4 years before they're really going to be good again.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people around here, I mean, you just mentioned it, him coming from Troy, a lot of eyes will be on Neil Brown from down here in Alabama, but to have to completely start over new with no Will Greer, and I know they're replacing the three top receivers from the team.
Yeah.
But you mentioned Houston earlier, and maybe one of the most famous coaches to come from Houston, Tom Herman, who made his way over to the University of Texas. They made huge strides last year in his second year with the team, finished 10-4, got that big regular season win over Oklahoma, and even the Sugar Bowl win over Georgia. But I'm amazed at just the sheer amount of roster turnover for Texas this year. They're losing so many starters. Seems like it all rides on that quarterback, Sam Ellinger. They have pretty high expectations for him this season.
They do, and I'll tell you that last year is the last time they'll be able to overachieve with Tom Herman. Mm. And I felt like they did a little bit last year. You know, won some close games. They have such an exemplary record under Herman as underdogs. And, you know, but you go out and you win 10 games last year, win a New Year's Six Bowl. I don't want to say it came out of nowhere, but in year two, that's a pretty big jump. And you're not going to be able to, especially at Texas, you're not going to be able to catch anyone off guard pretty much ever again. Now, you mentioned the turnover, and on the surface, that's very true. I think it's 7 or 8 guys on defense have some offensive linemen to replace. Little Jordan Humphrey's gone at wide receiver. There's some really big names that they have to replace. But I think when you start getting into year three, you start to see the guys that they've really been, you know, recruiting and then coaching up over the past few years. So while they break in new starters, it's not really the same as breaking in guys who've never played before. I think they feel pretty good about their rotation, especially along the defensive front. It's just not going to be a lot of guys that people have heard of, even though they're players who, you know, have game experience, maybe even have a few starts under their belt. They've done a better job of recruiting offensive linemen. They got to plug some holes there. I think the number one thing to watch, and this is pretty important relative to Ellinger's health, mm-hmm. is how are they going to do well in the running game? Because Ellinger is such a big part of that offense, right? He's a big kid, sort of a brute, almost like a running back that plays quarterback. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. It's just he's their big short yardage back. That has been his role in their offense in the past. They want to lean more on running backs. I think that complementary part of the offense relative to him, and then with Ellinger thrown deep off of that, that's really what they like to do. If they can keep Ellinger healthy, I think they're going to be up to 9-10 wins again. You know, this year, it's just, can that part of the offense continue to grow with it? Because he can't keep taking hits like that. He's not going to be able to stay upright.
It'll be a fascinating year. I always think college football is better when Texas is good. It just, there's more storylines. I like having that team down there in Austin be one of the powerhouses. Ben, we really appreciate you joining us tonight. Ben Kercheval, where can people follow you on Twitter and read some of your stuff online?
Yeah, my Twitter handle is just my name. It's at Ben Kercheval. And here probably over the next, I would say, month or so on CBSSports.com. You know, this is 150 years for college football. We're going to be ranking out and just pulling out a bunch of really good anniversary pieces from Dennis Dodd on down. So keep an eye out for that. We'll be rolling that out probably over the next month going into the season.
Outstanding. We appreciate it, Ben. Hope to talk again soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
That's Ben Kercheval from CBS Sports, the Big 12 preview as we get ready for the 2019 college football season. Coming up, another interview. We're talking the TBT tournament right here on FM Talk 106.5.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty with you on this Monday. Big thanks to Ben Kercheval from CBS Sports. Love talking football, and it's about that time. So previewing the Power 5 conferences as we head into the 2019 season, and just got done talking Big 12. Now, though, it's time for a little bit of basketball talk, because they're still playing, and they're still playing on ESPN. But it's not the NBA. There are some NBA names involved, but now we bring on former LaFleur High School basketball coach Otis Hughley to tell us about a pretty cool tournament that's been going on ESPN. I think they just had their first weekend of games, the basketball tournament they call it, and Coach Hughley is on with us on Sports Night to discuss it. Thanks for joining us tonight, Coach.
Thanks for that.
Coach Hughley, always a pleasure to talk to you. For those listeners who are not familiar with you, you have the Mobile, Alabama roots in which you led LaFleur High School to a 2007 state championship win. And I know that you've moved on since then and are currently coaching DeMarcus Cousins' organized team. And it's just an awesome opportunity for you to continue to coach. Team loyalty is love, and the owner of that team is DeMarcus Cousins. Tell us a little bit about the TBT. I know there is a $2 million prize at stake. You guys won this weekend, had an opportunity to watch you on ESPN on Saturday and on Sunday, but team loyalty is love. Tell me about it, Coach.
Well, DeMarcus
at a Puma sponsored tournament. They asked him if he wanted a team in it. Of course, DeMarcus has aspirations at some point, if he stays in basketball, to be in the front office, preferably a GM or a president. And this is a good opportunity for him to, you know, start seeing if that's something he really likes, not just in theory, but in experience. So this is a good way to get a little microcosm of OJT. And he selected his own players. He handpicked them. He called each one of them, accepted, and here we are competing. The byproduct is just, you know, the prize money, so he didn't have to have his own money to deal with to put together a team.
And I think that's the awesome part of it. The basketball tournament is a single elimination tournament played each summer in the United States, and it has over 64 teams, and it offers the $2 million prize, winner-take-all prize. And there's former collegiate, former professional players that are a part of this roster. And, Coach, when I saw you inside the huddle, when ESPN goes inside the huddle, I see you. You know, you're a Coach Hurley senior protege in New Jersey basketball. It's huge. You had an opportunity to play for Danny Hurley. Tell us a little bit about the insights of the TBT, how it's different. I know that at the four-minute mark at the end of the game in the fourth quarter, because it's broken down by quarters, they stop the clock. And there's a scoring system, and there's a strategy that takes place to where it's almost like you're playing chess and not checkers. Tell us how that concept has affected your coaching.
You there, Coach?
Okay. Yes.
Okay, we lost you for a second there.
Hello?
Yeah, we're having a little trouble hearing your phone. I'm not sure the service, the signal you're getting right there.
How is it now?
Okay. That's perfect.
Yeah, there's a little different strategy. You want to make sure you have the ball and you have enough timeouts just before that four-minute mark hits. And this way, if you are ahead, you get to be the first one to draw blood and score. So they'll add 8 points to whoever the highest score. If you have 67 and the other team has 70, then the game is 78. They turn the game clock off, leave the shot clock on, and the first one to 78 would win.
I think that strategy is awesome because I saw you utilize it this weekend. Talk to us about some of the players that are on the roster. I know you're having an opportunity to coach a young man from Baylor who had heart problems and was officially adopted by the NBA. But talk to us about that opportunity to coach guys that you normally wouldn't have an opportunity to be around.
Yeah, well, you know, not all in one place. I've known a lot of those guys from there in different settings and different occasions, because the basketball community is amazing. To have all on one host of talent like that, it's pretty unusual in a tournament like this. Hard putting talent together. That's why those jobs are so hard.
So
did a fantastic job doing so.
When is your next game? Because I know everyone here locally and nationally have an opportunity to watch you on ESPN. When's your next game, and who is your opponent?
It's whoever the winner.
Oh, man. We're just having a little bit too much trouble hearing what Coach has to say, which is too bad because, man, I'm super interested in this tournament that's going on. We'll have to get back up with Coach Otis Hughley and make sure he has a little bit of a better cell signal next time we talk to him. But it's the basketball tournament, and Team Loyalty is Love, founded by none other than the Mobilian, DeMarcus Cousins, who's kind of wrangled up his own team out there. And you said a $2 million prize.
Broken down to where the players will receive close to $165,000 each. The head coach, Coach Hughley, if they win, he'll receive $50,000. His assistant coaches will receive $50,000. And, of course, DeMarcus doesn't need a dime, nor does he want a dime after winning it, because Coach Hughley spoke about DeMarcus's aspirations after basketball. So this gives him an opportunity to also be a part. His brother, Jaleel Cousins, is on the roster as well. So it's just a wonderful opportunity to watch somebody who's near and dear to my heart get after it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I'm always rooting for Boogie from down here, and it seems like we're seeing more and more off-season basketball, not only played but really doing well. You know, with the big three, was it Paul Pierce that helped found that?
And Ice Cube.
And Ice Cube. So they've been – and Allen Iverson, I know he was involved early. And then, of course, the NBA Summer League games have just taken on a life of their own after the NFL – I mean, after the NBA rookie draft each year. But the basketball tournament, I know they'll be back on this weekend on ESPN. And then next week will be the championship rounds. But something very cool going on there. And just a pleasure to talk with Coach Otis Hughley there about the basketball tournament.
And hopefully, if we can get them with a better signal, if they do collect on that $2 million prize, we'll have an opportunity to talk to them about it and possibly get DeMarcus on to talk about them winning and him being the owner of that team as well.
You know, earlier we talked with Ben Kercheval from CBS Sports, gave us a little bit of a Big 12 preview. I wanted to ask Ben what he thought, his final verdict after kind of telling us what to expect with these teams. And, you know, Oklahoma, Vegas has them pretty heavily favored to win the entire conference and even make it into the college football playoff. It's really unbelievable what Lincoln Riley's been able to do his first 2 years after taking over for Bob Stoops. But I'm looking at Texas this year. I mean, there's been so much turnover on the roster, it'll be difficult. But Texas, for some reason, when they have a quarterback that is able to win the way that Sam Ellinger is, there's a passion that kind of surrounds that program. I really think Texas could give Oklahoma another shot this year. Corey, what are you thinking with Big 12? Who are you thinking walks away the champion this year?
Well, I think that you look at Oklahoma State, to me, is always a sleeper. And I just love Coach Gundy because he's a man, and he's 40.
That
back. He's not 40 anymore, but, again, he's a man. Mm-hmm. And I had an opportunity to watch him and his program when they played South Alabama down here. So I think that Oklahoma State could actually beat Oklahoma in that last game. And I think the biggest game of the Big 12 season, Dalton, is always that Red River robbery.
Mm-hmm.
You get Oklahoma and Texas getting after each other in Dallas, Texas. That's going to be a huge game, if not the biggest game of the year in that conference.
I'm really interested to see Jalen Hurts. I mean, he seemed like a completely new quarterback when he came in last year. The arm, it looked live, as they'll say, when he came in and stepped in for Tua late last season. If he's able to kind of parlay that here into his final, I think this is his very final last year of eligibility in college football. But Jalen Hurts, I'm not sure he could put up the same numbers that Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield have the years before. But with those legs and with Lincoln Riley's coaching, I really liked what Ben Kercheval had to say earlier, that with those two great running backs who might be the best 1-2 punch in the entire nation, but having Jalen Hurts back there running that read option, and now with his improved throwing ability, it'll be really interesting to watch them play this year.
You know, I think Jalen has developed as a quarterback, and I think the ultimate mega matchup, when people look forward, they want to see Alabama and Oklahoma, whether it's in the semifinals or the finals of the national championship game. But I think it has to be one game at a time, because a lot has been asked of Jalen. He came in late. You have to look at when he came in. Even though he had an opportunity to be in the spring with the Oklahoma Sooners, you're playing behind a lot of pressure. To me, there's more pressure on him at Oklahoma than there was at Alabama, because you're playing behind two Heisman Trophy winners, not finalists, winners, and that's back-to-back winners. So with that being said, I just think that Jalen's talent will flourish in the conference. He has to stay healthy, of course, which wasn't really a problem at Alabama, his accuracy and his deep balls, but this is a different type of conference. If he's able to run the football, he may not have to go vertical, so it's going to be interesting to see how he fits in to the Oklahoma Sooners program.
And, you know, playing a season in the SEC, it's cliche at this point, but you get real competition week in and week out. Of course, there's the years where you have bad Vanderbilt teams, bad Tennessee teams, bad Ole Miss teams. But with Jalen Hurts, we might not really know what he is at quarterback for the Sooners for a good part of the year, because when they're lining up against the Kansas Jayhawks defense or the Texas Tech defense or even, you know, the Kansas State defense, those teams are just so bad on defense year in and year out that Hurts is going to be able to put up big numbers. It all rides on those huge games against Texas, against the Iowa States, even the Baylors, if you want to bring them in. Hurts, I think he puts up big numbers. I'm not sure he has what it takes to put him over the top again.
Can they win a third consecutive Heisman? To me, that would be unheard of.
I think it is unheard of. That'd be ridiculous. That would be simply ridiculous. But I know a lot of people here in Alabama rooting for Jalen to win the Heisman if a certain other Alabama quarterback does not take home the hardware this year. Hey, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit of NFL. We'll preview the NFC East and the NFC North when we get back. This is Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Arwig and Corey LaBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
And welcome back as we wrap up another edition of Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. I'm Dalton Arwig. Corey LaBounty sits across from me. Coming up next, Sweet Home Cannabama with Jennifer Boozer. That's on after Sports Night. Thank you to Ben Kercheval from CBS Sports for talking Big 12 with us. We're getting awfully close to the 2019 season. He was nice enough to come on and talk Big 12 with us. You can follow him on Twitter at Ben Kercheval, K-E-R-C-H-E-V-A-L. Also, thank you to Coach Otis Hughley on to talk about the basketball tournament and his and DeMarcus Cousins' team, Loyalty is Love, as they continue into the second weekend of games. Corey, as we continue our football preview, I want to talk about the other half of the NFC. Last week, we talked about the Saints in the NFC South and the LA Rams in NFC West. And I want to start it off tonight talking about the NFC East. And we'll start with the odds that Vegas has put on these teams. Right now, they have Philadelphia as basically even money to win the NFC East division. Their total is at 10 games, so the over-under set for 10 wins for Philadelphia. That's coming off a 9-7 regular season last year, where they actually ended up making the wild card and beating the Chicago Bears in that wild card round 16-15 before losing to New Orleans in the second round. And Corey, it's all about Carson Wentz now. After 2 years of Nick Foles basically kind of saving his tail, he is no longer around to save the day. He ended up going to Jacksonville in free agency. So they've lost a former Super Bowl MVP, and it all rides on Carson Wentz's shoulders because if he goes down, the backup this year, the guy that will be starting at quarterback if Carson Wentz is injured, is some dude named Nate Sudfeld. So you don't have Nick Foles stepping in anymore. It's all about Carson Wentz and how he leads this team.
I mean, you look at the strong running game by the Philadelphia Eagles, hopefully coming back Jordan Howard. Mm-hmm. And that's huge for the Eagles, the way he's going to bounce back, coming back. And then a good wide receivers, Alshon Jeffrey, outstanding wide receiver. You look Aguilar, great wide receiver. DeSean Jackson and Braxton Miller coming over in free agency. He'll have plenty of targets to throw the football to. It's just going to be a matter of can they get that rushing game started.
Yeah, and it'll be a different look for them too with Jordan Howard coming over from Chicago and losing Josh Ajayi. I think Ajayi ended up going, he still hasn't been picked up the last I checked. He's still a free agent. But really cool story to see DeSean Jackson heading back to Philly after beginning his career there, and so many highlights from when he used to play with the Eagles. I'm not sure if he can keep it up at this age, but I didn't think that the last couple years in Tampa either, and he's still able to fly all the way down the field. I know the Philly O-line is still just absolutely loaded. You brought up the three starting receivers, maybe the best three that'll be trotted out there on any NFL team. I mean, they're right there with the Atlanta Falcons as far as talent at the receiver position. But Philly favored right now to win the NFC East. Of course, the other team looking across at them from the NFC East won the division last year. I'm talking about the Dallas Cowboys. Vegas has them at about plus 160 to win the NFC East. They're over-under for games this year set at 9. But last year, in a big part, because they were able to trade for Amari Cooper from Oakland, he completely changed how that offense looks, opened it up a little bit more for Ezekiel Elliott at running back, but they ended up finishing 10-6, won that first round game against Seattle 24-22 before they ended up losing to the LA Rams in the second round. Jason Garrett, you could say this year in and year out, again on the hot seat this year. I'm thinking if Dallas doesn't at least make it to the second round of the playoffs, I know Garrett's in the final year of his contract. I think they might finally cut bait on him, but I've thought that before, and Garrett's still around on the sidelines.
I think that Cowboys are one of the biggest mysteries because you never know what you're going to get out of the Cowboys. I mean, you have Dak Prescott, who, of course, is going to be throwing to Amari Cooper, and you have Ezekiel Elliott, who, in question mark, the Cowboys aren't really sure financially what they want to do with him. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott owns all type of records so far running the football for the Dallas Cowboys. Cowboys so far in his career. So I think defensively, that's one of the questions that they're going to have to answer also.
Yeah, and you can't beat those two young linebackers they have in Jalen Smith, which, of course, we all know what happened to him. His own now teammate, Ezekiel Elliott, in that, I think it was a Rose Bowl game when Jalen Smith for Notre Dame went out with that awful, awful leg injury. Took basically a redshirt year, his rookie year in the NFL. But now with him right next to Leighton Vander Esch in the middle of that defense, two of the best young linebackers in the game. And, of course, on the offensive side, they still have maybe the best offensive line in all of football. And then bring in Jason Witten back out of the Monday Night Football booth. I'm not sure what they expect out of him this year because he's up there in age. Didn't play last year. Maybe he's got a few less nicks and bruises than he's been playing with.
Also, Randall Cobb. You look at Cobb, the connection that used to be the favorite target of Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. I think that's going to be a tremendous attribute also for the Dallas Cowboys. But it's going to be, again, defensively is where I think the Cowboys are going not to have to struggle if they want to win this division again.
In the rest of the NFC East, you have, of course, Washington and the New York Giants. They're both set at 6 for the over-under, according to Vegas. And with Washington, it's almost like a career death sentence to play quarterback for the Redskins.
Wow.
With Alex Smith signing that huge deal last offseason, they got off to a pretty good start. I think they started 6-2 last year, and then he had just one of the worst leg injuries ever. I feel like I'm saying that every segment now, but when he went down last year, I mean, he just got the brace off this last weekend. I'm not sure Alex Smith will ever play quarterback again, so they went ahead and drafted a first-round quarterback, Dwayne Haskins Jr. out of Ohio State. Not sure whether he starts earlier or later in the year. I know Redskins fans probably hoping they don't need him to start until later in the year and want Case Keenum to kind of bridge that gap between Haskins and Alex Smith. But on defense, you could just call this the Alabama Crimson Tide.
It is. It's Bama 2.0, and the reason because of that, you look at Dan Snyder, the owner of the Washington Redskins. Why does he want so many Bama guys on the roster? Well, it's because they come from a winning culture and mentality and know how to get things done. You look at the success that the Miami Hurricanes had through their tremendous era of football. I think that Dan Snyder is trying to blueprint and hope that his Redskins can get the same thing that the Hurricanes were able to produce coming out of Miami, Dalton, because you unfortunately Reuben Foster goes down with a freak injury, but you have Landon Collins now assuring that safety position. Sean Deion Hamilton is back healthy, so he'll be a tremendous attribute to the defense as well. And you go and look at everybody else that's on that roster. You start looking at it on the field at any time, you could have 6 Alabama defensive players on that side of the ball for the Redskins.
It's crazy. And they lost Ha Ha Clinton Dix. He ended up going to the Chicago Bears, but you mentioned it earlier, bringing Landon Collins in. So swapping out one Bama player for another. And then they went ahead and drafted Ross Pierce-Baker in the 4th round just for good measure, I think, to have as many players from Alabama as they can. In the NFC North, you've got a pretty much a surprise team from last year with the Chicago Bears. They ended up going 12-4 in the regular season. And this division is about as tight as you can get. The Vegas odds makers have the top 3 teams in the division almost even for winning the NFC North. Chicago's at plus 170 to win the division. Green Bay with the new coach at plus 190. And then Minnesota at 2-1 odds. Of those teams, Corey, who are you liking? I can go first if you want. Not feeling Green Bay. I'm not liking their hire of Matt LaFleur to be their head coach. I mean, he had one season as an offensive coordinator, and honestly, it didn't go that well for him in Tennessee last year. But to have him come in and take command of an offense that is already being led by Aaron Rodgers, and it doesn't sound from offseason reports that they're already getting along very well. I'm not liking Green Bay. I'm thinking that the Minnesota Vikings could come in this year, and what they have at receiver with Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen and Kirk Cousins hitting his second year as quarterback, I'm really liking the Vikings this year.
I'm going to second that motion because you have Herb Smith Jr., the tight end Alabama, coming in and being added as an offensive addition to that as well. So I think that the Vikings can really come away and win that division. It'll be interesting to see again when you look at how the Vikings a couple of years ago were on the verge of going to a Super Bowl. It's amazing when you restructure a roster year to year where you're going to go. But again, Dalton, looking at this division, Minnesota, Green Bay, Detroit, and Chicago, I like Minnesota's chances.
Yeah, and I know some Saints fans out there are just, clamoring for a rematch against Minneapolis, against Minnesota after that Minneapolis miracle in 2017. Chicago, they're going to be a tough out with Mitchell Trubisky picking up his play last year and Matt Nagy calling
the plays. They got to get a kicker. Got to get a kicker.
Maybe they figured that out. That does it. Another episode of Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. We will be back next Monday talking Big Ten. Coming up next, Sweet Home Canabama with Jennifer Boozer.